Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Friday, May 15th meeting of the Minnesota House of Representatives Ways and Means Committee. We appreciate your interest and participation in the legislative process. To ensure everyone can view, hear, and understand today's proceedings, we ask for your cooperation in maintaining decorum and civility throughout this hearing. For the safety, security, and comfort of all attendees, please note the following guidelines. I, the committee chair, maintain control of these proceedings and establish the following expectations. Signs and placards are not permitted in the hearing room. Verbal outbursts, shouting, or disruptive behavior will not be tolerated. Applause or other audible demonstrations are not allowed. For safety reasons, standing or sitting in walkways and aisles, or standing or obstructing at your chair is prohibited. If you require any accommodation, please speak with our sergeant staff, identified by gold ties. Troopers and House security personnel are present to ensure everyone's safety. Those providing testimony will be given specific time limits, which must be strictly observed. If you receive an entrance ticket, please retain it, as it may be required for reentry if you leave the hearing room. Failure to comply with these guidelines may result in the removal from the hearing room. Our goal is to conduct these proceedings efficiently while ensuring everyone the opportunity to observe and participate appropriately. Thank you for your cooperation and participation. Representative Agbaje, have you had a chance to review the minutes of the last meeting?
Yes, so moved, Mr. Chair.
Agbaje moves the approval of the minutes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed by the same sign. Minutes are approved. For those of you who are interested in the cannabis bill, it's on the agenda, but we are going to be recessing after the Norris bill and reconvening later today to pass the cannabis bill. First on the agenda today is Senate File 334. This may be familiar since we passed it yesterday, but it's such a good bill that we're going to pass it twice. There's been a little bit of an issue with the path of, that it's traveling through the process. Representative McLarty has been kind enough to give up her bill and allow you, as we go through the process, I will be named chief author of the bill, and I thank her for her consideration. That's very nice of her to do that. This is the same information technology bill we passed yesterday, and we start with the DE, right?
You want to bring Senate File 334?
Okay, well, I'll try to get this right. We'll bring Senate File 334 before the committee. The motion is to pass it to the General Register, and the first action we take will be to adopt the DE1 to Senate File 334. Any member discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The bill is amended. We will now move this Senate File 334 as amended to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Thank you very much for take two. We'll move on to House File 2484. And this bill is becoming a vehicle. We have a DE1 amendment, and Representative Kosnick will speak to the DE1.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I do move the DE1 to House File 2484.
Let's make sure we get this moved before the committee. House File 2484 is moved before the committee to the DE1, Representative Kosnick.
Members, the next couple bills, but this one included, is a vehicle bill for the bonding bill. I am presenting on behalf of both of the chairs as we are currently working to wrap up and finalize that bill upstairs as we speak.
Any discussion to the DE1 to Senate File?
House File
2484.
I like the bill.
Representative Kosinski apparently likes the bill. That's good. We're happy.
Let's call it Christmas.
We're very happy.
And Mr. Chair, and committee members?
Seeing no discussion to the amendment, we'll adopt the DE1 amendment to House File 2484. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed by the same sign. The bill is amended. Any comments to the amended bill, Representative Kozniak?
Just again, this will be a vehicle bill for the cash portion of the bonding bill.
Thank you. Any questions for Representative Kozniak or questions to the bill? If not, we move that House File 2484 as amended be moved to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed by the same sign. House File 2484 is on its way. Next up, we have House File 719. We'll move this before the committee, and we do have a DE to this amendment, and it looks like Representative Kozniak is again prepared to speak to the DE. Representative Kozniak. No,
again, thank you, Mr. Chair. This is for Chair Franzen. I will be, I offer the DE or the A1 amendment, for the general obligation portion of the bonding bill. In the amount of $1.2
billion. Thank you. We are moving the A1 amendment. My mistake. Any questions to the A1 amendment? Do you like this one, Representative Szczesinski?
Is there an extra zero or two there? Or is there,
I think they all belong.
Chair, I like
Representative Igo?
I like this one.
President Igo likes this one. At least we have another liker. All those in favor of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed by the same sign. The A1 is adopted to House File 719. To the bill as amended, Representative Kozniak.
Again, this is the vehicle bill I'm presenting for Chair Franzen, which, for the record, she did present the bill for me when I was absent in her committee, so now we're even, and I would move adoption or move House File 719 is amended.
Thank you, Representative Kozniak. Any questions to House File 719 as amended? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? House File 719 is approved to move to the General Register as amended. Next, we have House File 2486. Representative Kozniak. A hat trick.
I am Chair Franzen again, and thank you for the opportunity.
Just a second, Representative Kozniak. I need to move House File 2486 before the committee. Representative Kozniak, we have an A1 amendment to House File 2486. To the amendment.
Members, Mr. Chair, this is a backup vehicle bill, just to make sure we do everything. If hopefully we don't need it, but in case we do, it's for the same amount as the previous bill, $1.2 billion. So I would move the A1 and ask for your support.
Thank you. Questions to the amendment? Representative Claiborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like for just level setting for this committee. I have never seen Representative Kozniak encourage spending of this kind, and I would like to acknowledge that in public. Thank you.
That's a lot of money.
I will remind you, Mr. Representative Claiborne, that it's not really Representative Kozniak.
I know you can't hardly tell the difference.
He's actually channeling Representative France.
Mr. Chair, committee members, this is the best I can do.
Any question to the amendment, Representative Szczesinski?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Kozniak. And my hope is that Representative Franzen is watching these proceedings. I just want to thank her for the hard work and dedication on the bonding bill and the negotiations with it, and her co-chair as well, and to remember my projects. That's all. That's
thank you. Any other questions to the amendment? We move the A1 amendment to House File 2486. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. The bill is amended to the House File 2486 as amended. Representative Kozniak.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in more seriousness, this is an important bill that we're putting together to do very important work and projects across the state of Minnesota. We were working hard throughout the last couple weeks, throughout the session, and we're in the final stages of negotiations, so we're optimistic that we will wrap it up and be able to present the bill to you in short order.
Any questions to the bill as amended? Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is somewhat in jest, but also somewhat seriously. I
I'm a big fan of early childhood learning and child protection facilities, and while it seems unlikely that the $1.2 billion that is currently allocated for that will end up being the number, I mean, I wouldn't mind if it's sort of somewhere in the vicinity of that. So if you can just do whatever you can to make sure the final bill does that the vehicle bill ends up getting some portion funded for early childhood learning and child protection facilities, the children of the state would greatly appreciate you and Chair Franson and Chair Lee. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Pinto. The motion is to move House File 2486 as amended to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? House File 24 as amended is on its way to the General Register. Okay. I misspoke earlier. We were actually going to delay both number 8 and number 9, the Norris bill and the Hansen bill. So for now, we are recessed. We will let you know as soon as we have a time set for our meeting later today. Thank you, members. Recess.
I said that, though. I'm like,
we got a court. We don't need one.
My wife just like,
oh, sorry. Well, good evening. We will reconvene the Ways and Means Committee. We're going to make a change in the amendment and go with Senate File 1943, the Legacy and Lands Bill, first. I will move the Senate File 1943 before the committee. And I believe, Madam Chair, you have a DE. Would you like to move the DE?
Yes, so move, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. The DE amendment is before the committee. Let's talk about it.
Yes, members, this is agreed upon language between the House. So this is the LaSarte Sam's Heritage Council's recommendations in full. The dollar figures have not changed since the bill was first heard in Legacy Committee. Article 1 is the Architectural Heritage Fund. This fund is allocated every year. The article contains about $191 million in projects to restore, enhance, and protect habitat for fish, game, and wildlife. The first change from the committee is on line 10.9 of the DE. This is comfort language that the House GOP requested on the Roosevelt River project. The second change is starting on line 19.31, and this is language sought by the House DFL to make it easier for projects to apply the CPL grants. The third change starts on page 27. This is language the House GOP wanted on term limits for citizen members. Currently serving members may continue to serve out their terms. And the last change you'll find is on page 28. The House GOP requested changes to the process for hiring a director. And so now the council will be able to go into a closed session to interview director candidates. And then we also provided extensions for things like the cart barrier project found on page 39. And Article 2 is the Parks and Trails. This is a technical change to Representative Scraba's project in Greater Minnesota. And then Article 3 is also an extension requested by the Senate for a SUNY art installation found on page 46. And then Article 4 is the Representative Fisher's land. And I'm happy to take any questions.
Do members have any questions or comments to the DE? Representative Heintzman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just I wanted to thank the bill author for the DE, and I am happy to support it. That's all.
Other questions to the DE amendment to Senate DE 1 amendment to Senate File 1943? Seeing none, we'll move the DE. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The bill is amended. The DE is adopted to Senate File 1943, the DE 1. Chair Vang. Any comments?
I just want to thank my counterpart, Representative McDonald, Josh Heintzman, and the Legacy Committee of members for their support and their work on completion of this agreement. I also want to thank the advocates and the council, as well as interest groups who have helped push this bill to the finish line, as well as leadership that has helped push this agreement through. Let's get it going. Let's get it passed.
All right. With that, all those in favor of the motion to move Senate File 1943 as amended to the General Register, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. You are on your way to the General Register, Chair Vang. With that, we will move to Senate File 4401. I will move 4401 before the committee. Thank you. I will move 4401 before the committee, and we have a DE amendment, the author's amendment to the bill, and we'll go ahead with explanation of the DE1. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair. And would you like me to go over all of the aspects, which will basically be just like a bill presentation since it is a DE? Would that be okay with you?
Yes.
Thank you, Chair. Members, House File, or Senate File 4401 is the cannabis bill, and this DE gets the bill into the shape that was agreed upon between the Senate and the House. And so I'm going to go over each of the provisions that will be in here. If you have questions about anything, I think I've memorized all of it, so feel free to ask, but I'm just going to go over the high-level things. There's quite a bit in here, so I'll talk a little fast, but I can always loop back to whatever you'd like. So one of the provisions you'll find in here is a Representative Allen bill that clarifies that medical consultants and pharmacists can be employees or contractors, at micro retailers, meso retailers, and retail license holders. Another provision is a Representative West provision. It allows businesses to transport product to testing for 30 months or until the transporters, we really see more of them come online, and it does provide protections for tampering and potential deceit. We also have another Representative West provision here that modifies the true party of interest provisions to allow a true party of interest to operate municipals without being held to the standard true party of interest provisions. It will allow for up to 10 of those. We also have another true party of interest provision that allows a true party of interest to own up to 33% of up to 4 social equity businesses. Historically, that's been limited to just 10%. We also have a provision that would require the first 6-month extension be granted to those who ask for it and move a second second 6-month extension for good faith efforts for folks who need it after following their preliminarily approved status. That allows folks more time to find investors and things like that. We also have a Representative West provision that clarifies that, how combined cannabinoids are calculated, whether or not the named cannabinoids in laws and in law can be stacked or if it's in each. So there was some confusion about that, and that clarifies that. There's also a provision in here about a provision that I think everyone's been pretty excited about, which is about the medicinal psilocybin program. This is actually just going to be a report for that, and then directing the office to pursue federal funding. So this is not the entire program that you may have heard about before, but it does kick off the program and get that report going so rulemaking can begin. Then we'll move into the agency bills that are included in here. That was always the original package here, so the other provisions we've taken were in order to make sure we were addressing some things that folks wanted. So the first agency bill is House File 4199. This is really a technical cleanup and housekeeping bill. It removes some elimination of language about hemp-derived consumer products. We're going to maintain that language. It adds language about ratioed products. So if you have a one-to-one ratio of something, it adds language about that. It repeals the temporary regulations, since we're no longer in the temporary regulation world, and that those days are behind us, so we can just delete that. It's no longer needed. It aligns some terms like license holder or licensee just for consistency. It clarifies that the Department of Labor is actually the Minnesota Department of Labor versus the federal. It allows businesses to sell equipment and other non-cannabis products to each other, like shelving or other retail equipment. That was not very explicit and wanted to be sure that that is allowed for businesses to sell their lighting to each other or something like that. It requires that a background check and a LPA must be signed within 6 months. Right now, people in qualified status can kind of hang out there for a long time. That sucks up one of the licenses from the market, and this will allow those to kind of get recycled back in if they're not going to pursue licensure. We also clarify that smokable and vapable products are not to be allowed for medical patients that are under the age of 21, and it aligns and clarifies some definitions of adult edible medical products and adult edible adult use products. The next agency bill in here is House File 4200. This is a bill that clarifies data practices, explains which data is considered public and not. Things like your social equity status, why you're there, your metric system, things like that are clarified and discussed there. The next agency bill is House File 4201. This clarifies some on-site consumption things that needed to be clarified. It doesn't disrupt business, but it just provides some alignment. The most important part of 4201, and I think this is probably one of the most important provisions in this whole bill, arguably for some of our business owners, is that this creates a bridge for businesses that are currently in the hemp industry and would like to move to cannabis. The federal actions have really left an uncertain future for these businesses, especially brewers, and they don't know what is going to come next until the feds make a decision. And so should those businesses want to take a step out of hemp and into cannabis, we don't think they should have to shut down their previous business first and be able to provide a bridge there for folks that want to do that. This also requires some of the 21 plus and stop warnings be listed on different hemp products and anything that also has like trace amounts of THC. So even if it's not something that has a lot in it, basically anything that's made with a cannabis product may have some trace amounts, and we think that should be accurately labeled as such. This also allows hemp products to replace many of their labeling requirements with a QR code. Sometimes that saves room on the packaging and can just be updated a little bit more easily. So we wanted to save them the space for that. The next agency bill is House File 4202. That repeals the interim ordinance allowances that expired on 1/1/25. It also clarifies that reasonable restrictions have to be adopted by ordinance, not just made up on the fly at a council meeting, for example. It also clarifies that locals need to calculate their retail registrations based on population. So there was just a little confusion about that. I wanted to make sure that was clear. It clarifies how to calculate optional retail registration caps when the city or township has delegated that to a county. It also clarifies that small businesses have to comply with local zoning ordinances, fire code, and state building code, and how that the cities can report somebody who's not. There were some references to things like state fire code, which is not actually, state building code, which didn't actually exist. So, it also clarifies that locals who have accepted the retail registration authority also need to report that they're doing compliance checks to the Office of Cannabis Management, just like they do for tobacco, alcohol, or anything else. The next agency bill is House File 4203. That just is a reporting bill. It eliminates some duplicative reporting, really trying to use government money a little bit more efficiently rather than repeating reports over and over there. But it does maintain the requirement for OCM to continue to report on grants and make sure that's there. The grants that are administered for in the cannabis world are actually administered by other agencies, but OCM will continue to report on those, so we get those. The next agency bill is House File 4395. This is an events modification bill. The shortest way to explain this is right now an event organizer would have to get a license for every single event that they do. That's pretty cumbersome for the office and the individuals. This kind of streamlines that process and allows them to update the office based on each event that they do rather than having to get a license for each event. So they'll have an event license and then provide updates about the specific events they're holding. This is actually a cost savings for OCM as well. The next agency bill is House File 4398. This bill, some folks had questions about language that banned disposable vapes. There's actually already law that says, from 1993, that says that disposable, any rechargeable item has to have a removable battery. And so that's a thing that the industry needs to keep adjusting and growing towards. But for now, we're just going to remove that so we can keep having more stakeholder engagement and talk about that. This makes sure that it corrects the license caps and that those continue to stay in effect. We also made a mistake at one point, very small one, that didn't, it the language is interpreted to say that if somebody changes their business from like a LLC to an incorporated, that they would have to get a new license. That was never the intent, so we're just adding some clarifying language to say that's not what's expected. It also clarifies that if somebody had a license, had it revoked, and then applies again, that the office can consider that previous revocation as justification for denial right out the gate. That just makes it easier for them rather than putting someone through the whole process just to know that they're going to get denied because they're on a probationary period from their previous revocation. It also establishes that the OCM can consider violations that occurred as a result of a mistake. The current language says that they may consider a mistake made in good faith that it didn't involve gross negligence, illegal sales, or cause harm to the public. We're saying that they must consider that. I think that's more fair to businesses to make sure everybody gets that. It also moves the civil penalties from what's currently in the criminal disqualification header under the civil penalties header, which is where it actually belongs. And then there's been some confusion with businesses. If you're a micro retailer, for example, you have to both be familiar with and understand the micro section of law and the retail section of law. We always intended for this section of law to be plain language and easy for a business owner to understand, particularly new business owners. So we're going to move the mention, for example, in this example, a micro retailer would be able to see what their retail requirements are under the micro section, right? So just trying to make it a little bit easier for folks. And that aligns with some of the other endorsements as well. And then it also allows OCM to level civil penalties at non-licensed businesses that are selling products. So this is the, you know, for example, a gas station that's on Reddit saying, if you come in and say Scooby-Doo, I'll give you the pre-rolls that are in the back and they'll sell them. So we want to make sure that non-licensed businesses are not facing no civil penalty for doing something like that. That's all of the agency bills that have been pretty straightforward. The next agency bill that I'll talk about has been a collaborative effort between a lot of different parties, and I just want to say thank you to everyone who's worked on this with us because it's been a lift, and we have done a really good job of all getting on the same page. So this is about streamlining. So our current medical cannabis program in Minnesota requires that people who have the medical endorsement or are a med combo business currently have to follow a few hardships. And we knew when we originally put this in place in the law that it was always intended to be a bridge that we would reevaluate as the market went forward. But we wanted to both, you know, make sure that our existing medical companies had an opportunity to continue to participate in the market as it changed and make sure that other businesses still stood a shot and weren't just up against someone who had a lot more privilege, experience, and whatever against them. We wanted to find a balance between those two things. So this is referred to as streamlining. The current businesses also have to use two metric systems. So that's tracking cannabis in two different systems, medical and adult use. And that's really cumbersome for anybody, including these very large organizations who struggle and see a lot of administrative costs going out towards managing that. So you can imagine how hard that would be for a small business. So there's multiple reasons why we needed to do this year, but I wanted to kind of start with that it is cumbersome and hard to manage it as it is because it was always intended to be temporary. So it's time for that transition. So that transition will start, according to this bill, on 1/1/27. So the current Med Combo license holders, the license name will change and the new requirements will be turned on January 1st, 2027. It is going to set the canopy limits for those current ones, and I can go into all of those numbers if anyone's interested, but for the sake of time, I know not everybody is as into cannabis policy as I am, so I won't get too far in the weeds unless you want me to. But it does set a cap at 8, and also establishes some reclassification requirements, so meaning if you want to grow to be a macro business, we have like a step up for everybody. So a meso business would have to have all of the endorsements which are required to be a macro, which is manufacturing, cultivation, and retail for 2 years prior to doing that, just so we know that they'll be effective in that. It's a great way to be set up to fail if we're not taking some of those steps. And then this agency bill also does something really important for our medical patients. And I know we thank you, Chair Torkelson, for working with us to make sure I knew what those were from folks who were concerned about our people who need cannabis to live. This includes, you know, kiddos that are battling cancer, people with epilepsy, and people who really rely on cannabis every day. So this bill is going to define what a high-need medical product is so that more people know what they need to keep in stock in order to provide service for these folks. It requires that these be carried within 24 hours of a patient request at a micro, mezzo, or retailer, and that it be in stock at the new macros. That's generally, that's been the business they've been in for a long time already, so that's not really news to them, but we wanted to just make sure we had that. And should anybody get a macro license that isn't following those, we do have some enforcement mechanisms as well to make sure that they're providing patient access for these products. And then there's been a bottleneck of testing as the testing, the market kind of delivers more testing capacity. And so we'll require that these high need medical products that people need be expedited at the testing facilities, which I think is important. So for those who don't know, you grow cannabis, that goes and gets tested, you get that result back, then you manufacture it into these products, and then you have to send it back again. And that second product, that's just kind of a longer turnaround time. So want to expedite that. And then it also just lastly clarifies that the outdoor grow limits and that they have to choose between indoor and outdoor. There's also then one other provision in here that's about some a new product that's it's called a large format product. You'll see that in here. And that, Mr. Chair, is the summary of the bill, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Before we move to questions on the bill, there is an A1 amendment to the DE. And Representative Nolan West will present the amendment.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the A1 amendment. The underlying DE reflects an agreement made between all parties that took some doing, but we finally made it there. One of its shortcomings is that we have a facility being built in Elk River for a business that's operating under the current rules, and that costs many millions of dollars. And while this bill does many good things, one thing it lacks is it changes the rules for them in the middle of their investment into Minnesota. That is unfortunate. We tried to prevent it because the last thing we should be doing is changing the rules and engendering litigation. But sometimes groups want to pick winners and losers, and we did our best to help as many people in this bill. So to try and mitigate that damage long term, my hope is that we could accept this A1 amendment, which prioritizes them should the canopy be increased. And the reason it does that is because they are currently going to have a dead asset at the cost of millions of dollars, and this will probably engender some litigation, and OCM's track record isn't particularly good when it comes to defending itself. So I would hope we'd avoid it, but this at least creates a path for the damage to be undone by the department and encourages them to do so. And I would appreciate if it was adopted on the bill, and I would request a roll call.
A roll call requested, roll call supplied. Comments to the A1 amendment. Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Chair Torkelson. I have a question for Representative West. Would this cover the Elk River facility?
I think so.
With the language edits, I do not believe that their site that they were planning on expanding to is licensed yet. Is it the overall business that is licensed, not the site?
Representative West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Novotny. This is about the office's ability to increase canopy down the line because this bill cuts canopy, which is the problem for that particular facility. The carve out here does cover that because the entity itself holds the license. So yes.
We have
Senator
Brown.
Thank you, Chair West.
Other questions to the DE amendment? The AO amendment that is before the committee, the AO to the DE. Any questions to the amendment?
Thank you, Chair Talkerson. I guess I didn't hear what the author of the bill thought about the amendment.
She hasn't said anything, Representative Joaquin. Representative Hansen, would you care to comment on the A1 amendment?
Sure. Thank you, Chair Torkelson, and thank you for the question. I appreciate that. This would kind of put into place a new standard in cannabis. we've really tried hard to be not give preferential treatment to anybody in the industry. We've tried to be as fair as we can across the board. And I think our small businesses in Minnesota deserve that. And so it's a principle of legalization I've really stood strong by. And to do that, I will say that the, and I don't know that this, the way this is phrased would accomplish what I've heard was the goal. But I, what I can offer is to say is that our bill does say that should the market need a raised canopy of any kind across the whole industry, this is the state, that the office would do that for everybody. So if we need to raise the canopy plants for, let's say, mezzo businesses, the office has that discretion both in their original duties in the very early section of Chapter 342 and then also in the market stability section of 342 that says should the market need this, they are allowed to increase canopies, but that would apply to everyone. We wouldn't just single out any one company.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So does this, what brought on to the bill's author, what brought on the change in the square footage? And then I have another question after that.
Yeah, so Representative Hansen.
So the original law was always, like I mentioned earlier, thank you, Chair Torkelson, by the way, was always meant to be a bridge to get us to a different place once we kind of saw what the market would actually do. And so the square footage at this point is set at where the companies currently stand. Originally, we were not getting accurate numbers as to what that was, unfortunately, and so we've had to pivot since then. And now we know better. Those businesses have been measured, and so we have empirical data to tell us what the square footage is, and that's what's informed the numbers before you.
Follow-up, Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So to the bill's author, would is every single business across the state tied to this number? Or are some of the folks that will have these businesses, do they have a higher number than the 38,000?
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Scott. I don't know if I can see you, but hello. Hi. This, we have parity across all of them. So a meso business canopy is a meso business canopy, micro canopy is a micro canopy, macro canopy is a macro canopy. So it doesn't single out anybody specific there. The one thing that is changing is that, you know, we don't have enough medical participation. So patients have told us that they want to have access to medical cannabis in more places. And so we've offered some incentives if someone does choose to do that on the canopy side. But that, again, would apply to everybody. It's not going to single out anybody that, you know, any one company or anything like that.
Chair Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the bill's author. So for those businesses that may have already committed to the previous law of 60,000 square feet, what are they to do if they've already purchased that more land? What are they to do with the contracts for the ancillary businesses that they have contracts with? What are they to do? How will they be? Will they be held harmless with this bill, or are they going to have to, like, what's going to happen?
Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Chair Torkelson. I appreciate that. I don't want to speak for them because I don't work for any of them, so I just want to be really clear about that. I'm not sure what their plans are. I do know that the square footage was measured, and nobody is at 60,000. So we know the exact measurement of the two that are operating right now, and the numbers in the bill reflect that number to be slightly higher than their current standing. So it's not dropping anything or cutting anything that exists right now. I don't want to foresee what another business will do. I don't work in that side of things, so I can't comment there. But the intention was always that this would be a temporary piece, and we've kept a close eye on where those canopy numbers have been as to make sure that this number is based in fact, that there's data behind it. It's not just a number pulled out of the sky, as the previous number we learned too late had been.
Chair Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What Representative West alluded to, or Chair West alluded to, was that there could be, you know, possible litigation for changing the law midstream. And so I'm wondering what your thoughts are on how this change could put the Office of Cannabis Management at jeopardy of a lawsuit.
Chair Hans.
Thank you, Chair Torkelson. I'm not a lawyer, so I don't even play one on TV, so I'm not going to pretend to answer like about how all that works. But what I'll say is that the current statute or the current proposal in front of us is not going to shrink anything. Like, you can't shrink something that doesn't exist yet, right? And so we are meeting right at where they're at and trying to be as accurate as we can with that data to make sure that number was set based on where we know that to be. I can't foresee what the other branch of government will or won't do or decide on something like this. That's not our side on things, so I don't want to kind of put anything out there to try to pretend like I do know that either. I'm also happy to invite anyone from the office if they want to make comments that probably sound smarter than mine. I think they have several law degrees over there that I don't have.
Chair Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the bill's author, what are the canopy limits for the tribes on reservations?
Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Chair Torkelson. Chair Scott, those are set by the compacts. They're actually not set by the legislature. And so I would have to look them all up. I actually don't know them by heart, but they are not influenced by the legislature whatsoever. These are based on compacting language between the governor and the tribal sovereign nations.
Chair Scott.
All right. I keep saying my last question, so this will be my last one. And maybe it's more just of a comment. But my understanding is that the tribes are getting some special treatment for this, and they have zero limits on the size of their canopy. So you can kind of understand some consternation of the fairness of what's happening here with all of this. And I'm no fan of, you know, legalization of this stuff anyway, but at least if you're gonna do it, have a legal or a level playing field for every person or every entity. And I think that's really, I think it's not a good look for our state to pick winners and losers. That's the end of my questioning. Thank you.
Chair Hans.
Thank you, Chair Torkelson. And I appreciate that. I don't like picking winners and losers either. And I frankly think that this amendment would do just that. It would put two companies to the front of the line. And I talk to a lot of small business owners, like brand new businesses in this space. And they would see that, you know, a big corporation that's been in business for a really long time gets to go first as an unfair thing. That's how they would frame it to me. And so I've tried to advocate to kind of uphold the principles of a number of different stakeholder groups in this. And I think that the small business perspective there does also matter, that they are very concerned about anyone getting special treatment. So that's kind of the lens through which my position stands on this, is that I think it is important that if there is an increase in the canopy in Minnesota due to market need, that everybody gets to equally benefit from that.
Chair Novotny.
Well, clarification, Chair Torkelson, are we got to vote on the bill? I feel I want to talk more about the overall DE1 after the A1's adopted. Or
we will go to discussion on the
I'll go
DE1
now. Thank you.
Once it's amended.
Thank you, Chair.
Or not amended.
So a lot of what Chair Scott said, I share the same reservations and have real concerns about this. Representative Hansen, do you have a Sam's Club or a Costco or a Amazon membership?
Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Chair Torkelson. No, I don't. I can't afford it.
Okay. Well, Chair anybody Norman. Else in the room? Thank you, Chair Tork. Anyone else in the room? This is such a incredible illustration of where we're at and what the problem is. We have a business that, you know, has done everything right. And I'll throw out this disclaimer first. As it's no secret to anyone in this room, if you've been here a while, how I feel about the cannabis and the marijuana, not a fan, was recently in Vegas, was disgusted and had to throw away some clothes from the secondhand smoke just walking on the streets. That being said, this is a business that for a long time has done everything right. They were the first ones in for medical cannabis. They've been doing everything right. They come in, they take over an empty building that had been banded by Great River Energy. They spend, I'm told, like $30 million getting this thing set up. I've been getting reports from the Elk River City that they're getting everything right. They're following everything that they're supposed to be doing. And now, a week away from opening the doors and starting hiring people, we're just going to say, we don't care. We're not fair. You said, you talk about macro grovers and privilege and win or lose. We're all here in a capitalist society. This is socialism taking over. It was socialism when it was set up, and now I'm told that, you know, we have to do this DE1 because the hemp industry could crush. Well, it was always going to be a failure. It was always going to be stumbling block after stumbling block. We've had nothing but problems getting the people to run it or anything. It's been nothing but problems because it's not run on actual business markets. It's who's picking the winners and losers. And when the state picks the winners and losers, everybody loses. I'm just shocked that we're doing this to a business that has been doing the medical cannabis and doing it right and has been following along and paying the taxes and supporting people with good paying jobs. And it'd be like when we still had some major breweries in town, if all of a sudden we decided that, you know, we're not going to let Miller or one of the big beer companies come in because it's going to affect the local growers, the local breweries, or anything like that. We're not going to sell major wine markets because we need to support our local wine market. Where are we going to extract this out to? And is Minnesota going to go more socialist? I can't think of anything that illustrates the path of this state better than this bill. I am going to be against this. I'll vote for this amendment, but overall, this DE is putting us down a path that none of us will be happy with in the end. Well, maybe some of us will, but anybody that pays taxes and works hard for a living won't.
Chair Claiborne.
Did you call my name?
I did, Chair Claiborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hansen, I'm a little bit confused as to where we are with this amendment. I thought I heard you say, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that adopting this amendment is picking winners and losers, and that if it's my understanding of what I heard, that that is not the desire of the Office of Cannabis Management. Mm-hmm. Am I correct? Is that what I just heard?
Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Chair Torkelson. The language in the amendment, at least as I saw it last, was if the office determines additional canopy is needed to meet market demand, the office must prioritize increasing the canopy for cannabis macro businesses who held a LEC cannabis business license prior to January 2026. The only macro businesses as of January 1st, 2027 that will have met that criteria would be only two companies. So it would, in fact, prioritize and kind of hamstring the office to provide that. And like I said, just a principle of the way that this law has gone and our industry has been is that we really do try to have an equal playing field. And I'm not, you know, saying that there's not, other comments I could have to represent Novotny's comments, but this as it stands right now, like I think pretty clearly says it must prioritize giving that to those two. They're the only two that would meet that criteria, unless there was some future growth down the road, but that growth would be at least 2 years out given what the requirements are to apply for a macro license. It would require that the industry did in fact need more canopy space, and it would require the office to open another licensing window for a macro license, and it would require an applicant who could afford to participate at that level.
Chair Claiborne.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, and please forgive me, I'm just trying to get clarification on whether I should vote yes or no on this amendment. As I'm hearing you describe it, that there may be businesses that were licensed post January 2026 that are also doing well, that could potentially handle excess canopy if they were given the equal playing field and equal opportunity. Is that what I'm hearing?
Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Chair. If this amendment were to go on, then it would require the prioritization for only the two macro businesses that had any license before that. And so, I mean, the only business that might be in that category is a mystery business I can't name right now. It's kind of just a thought. But it would definitely include the two companies that have been referenced.
Chair Claiborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we would be picking winners and losers if we adopt this amendment. Thank you so much. I have no further questions.
Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Chair.
Chair Hansen.
I was like, I don't know what we're doing with
I
this.
I was just trying to get your attention.
Thank you.
Chair Hansen, were you aware of the expansion plans in Elk River at the time that you were writing this bill?
Thank you, Chair Torkelson. I had heard rumors about it, and I had heard in one conversation in one meeting that there were some. I was not familiar, privy to all of the specifics. Every Friday, I host a working group. So every Friday for the last 12 weeks, we have a number of stakeholders that join us. And I have my entire Fridays for all of session and all of January are spent doing cannabis meetings and cannabis work. So that's where my cannabis time is. So those hours are always open to folks, but I have only been asked for one meeting and with the folks that had those plans from what I hear. And so unfortunately, Chair Torkelson, I'm not very privy to the exact details of it, but I've heard from other people and I've heard some rumors about it.
Chair Hansen, I've been involved with this bill and this work for about 2 weeks.
Yes.
And I've heard all about it.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that you haven't heard about it. What are the current canopy limits for that business today?
Currently, Chair Torkelson, so I agree and I share your shock about that, unfortunately. I've been working in this space for about 10 years. And I frequently see that things that ought to make sense don't. It is often upside down world. Things that should be right go left, and things that are up are actually down. So I share your concern about that and would agree that if that were something, I think I would have probably had that information for you here today. The medical combination business for anybody with a med combo license, there is a maximum canopy of 90,000 square feet if that is reached through a 2-to-1 ratio. So the way that I tend to explain this to people is that if you have plant A, B, and C, plant A and B have to be sold to a medical patient first before plant C could be sold to an adult use or a recreational customer. And so in order to continue to grow a canopy from where it started and where it ends up each year, the companies with this license have to sell a certain ratio there, and that's very strict and is important to note. So the current canopy limits are both companies are under 40,000 total square feet right now, both of them. I don't know that if it's a trade secret, so I don't want to say the exact numbers just to try to protect some of that. I don't know. I'm sure it's available through, if you ask them or other ways, but I just want to be careful here. But they are both under 40,000 square feet right now total, which means that there's a 2-to-1 ratio being applied to that current square footage of less than 40,000 square feet. And so I do want to just kind of get ahead of something. I think there's been, and I've heard this throughout the time, that the canopy levels in the bill look like they cut them in half because the number that is in statute and the number I'm proposing is indeed 50% of that number, right? But the reality is that you can't cut nothing in half. And so what is being proposed is actually meeting and right-sizing, and I think it's more prudent and appropriate to refer to it that way. And so that's what I've, in my conversations with folks, have referred to this as a right-sizing. And any plans that are out there, I mean, I've talked to lots of businesses that have plans that start and stop. This is unfortunately a pretty volatile industry like a lot of businesses are, restaurants included and such. And a lot of folks that maybe make investments that can't pan out for a number of reasons or or something falls through. There's a lot of ancillary businesses in this industry where people have found great success. And so I think there's been, it is interesting to have that conversation. If I were consulting for somebody in my not legislative job, I think I'd have some ideas, but I don't think that's appropriate to share here. But if you're interested, Chair Torkelson, I'm always happy to give you as much information as I have in my head.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. Mm-hmm. Chair Novotny has chosen to interrupt my line of questioning. Chair Novotny.
Thank you, Chair Torkelson. I've got a short attention span myself, and I do hope to get to the law enforcement memorial here before 7 o'clock. One last question for you, Representative Hansen. Sure. Do you remember having a meeting with the representative or the lobbyist and the owner of the business in Elk River on March 5th for about an hour? Mm-hmm.
Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Chair Torkelson. Yes, Representative Botney, that was the one meeting that I'd had, and I do believe their lobbyist has joined into our weekly meetings and has been there, but has been a bit of a silent partner, which is fine. Everyone's allowed to participate how they see fit. But this, the exact plans, as Chair Torkelson was asking me about, I did not get like the blueprints or the exact numbers, or was that kind of, and frankly, in writing this, you know, the office had measured this canopy, and that was the data that I felt was prudent to follow and responsible to follow was the data from the office based on the actual measuring of that canopy.
Chair Novotny.
Thank you, Chair.
Are you done?
Thank you, Chair.
Can I continue with my line of questioning now? Thank you.
You called that sir.
Chair Hansen, can you imagine a business that would invest millions of dollars into a facility based on a current license that would do that for no good reason?
Thank you, Chair Torkelson. I think I you know, can't speak for that. I'm not a business owner. I want to just be very clear about that. That's not the lane that I operate in. But from what I've heard from people who are business owners is that there's a lot of volatile things that happen, like a lot of changes that can happen in a long time. And I think I would argue that our hemp businesses, our current businesses in Minnesota, they've invested millions of dollars into their businesses too. And they've also seen this like attack from the federal government. So I don't think that like it's necessarily fair to say that the federal government's attacking this business, right? That's what they would call it, and that's probably what they would want me to call it here. But I think, you know, the federal government saw good reason for why they made those changes to the federal law, and that's impacting a $62 billion national industry. And then,
so,
you know, we
Chair
are
Hansen, if we were doing this a month later and this new facility was up and running and the canopy was much larger than it is today, would you have written this bill in a different fashion?
Thank you, Chair Torkelson. If the Office of Cannabis Management had measured that canopy and it measured differently, then absolutely we would have set those numbers at about where they are. We are not in the interest of shrinking anybody. Hence why when this business was, you know, involved in the original drafting of the law, they said they wanted to participate in the adult use market, and we made sure we found a pathway for that that kind of met the fairness that other folks were looking for as well. And we heard from testimony last year from the businesses with those current licenses that if the ratio continued as it was going to put them out of business. And that's a very precarious situation for us to be in as the state of Minnesota, because we have medical patients, kids and people, like I mentioned before, who really need that access to that. And they were really great at providing that. And so it was important to us that we provided that bridge and that pathway there. So I think if we were having conversations about what the canopy sizes were, if I wasn't following the data, I think that would be a problem. I think if I pulled the numbers out of the sky, that would be an issue. But there is a rationale for that. And again, the intent here is to right size so that we can continue to move forward. And this was the time when we had planned to do that.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. I'd like to hear from the Office of Cannabis Management. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Hi, my name is Eric Tobel. I'm the Executive Director for the Minnesota Office of Cannabis Management.
Thank you for joining us today. Were you aware of the expansion plans in Elk River?
Thank you for the question, Mr. Chair. No, not really. I don't think I was intimately aware of the specific plans of the specific business and where they were locating new or expanding buildings, or what those plans were at various buildings. Obviously, when businesses change locations, they alert us to it, whether it's retail locations, manufacturing sites, or cultivation sites.
So you were completely unaware, Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, thank you for the question. Yeah, I don't I don't recall having any conversations with the company in question about their facilities or being advised that they were building a second location to do the same activities that were occurring at a previous location. I vaguely heard of the possibility that they were going to open a new location. But like I say, that wasn't something that was like a regular conversation or direct conversation I had with anyone in particular.
Well, once again, Commissioner, I've been in this conversation for about 2 weeks, and man, it's very aware to me. Commissioner, do you agree with the estimate that I've heard that the need for cannabis canopy in the state of Minnesota will eventually reach about 1.5 million square feet?
Mr. Chair, yes, that's correct. The office estimates about 1.5 to 2 million square feet of canopy needed to service the market at full maturity.
So I won't ask you to do math in public, but the difference here between this proposed canopy that's in this bill and a 60,000 square foot canopy that is anticipated is 15,000 square feet. 15,000 square feet of canopy is 1/10 of 1% of the perceived need for canopy in the state of Minnesota. Let me state that again. 1/10 of 1% of the need for canopy in the state of Minnesota, and we are restricting a business that had plans to expand their business here in the state of Minnesota, apparently because the Office of Cannabis Management and the author of this bill are unaware of what's happening.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I trust your math's correct.
Any other comments to the amendment, the A1? Representative Katiza Watum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question is actually for the amendment author. Chair West, I'm hoping that you can help me understand a little bit by from what I've heard from Representative Hansen, that there's only these two businesses at this time who have qualified for a macro business license prior to the date of January 2026. If there are other businesses that kind of come into the market past this date, so I mean like from now onward, how do you imagine that the office would like prioritize that? It's like these two businesses would be able to expand first, or they would just say, I'm just kind of curious how that would look.
Sorry. Representative West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Katiza Watum. What this amendment is after, which I share your concern, we all want, well, we'd like to have a fair market. This is trying to correct a harm that is being done by the bill. It doesn't even correct it immediately. It's a compromise effort. If we could just make it work within the existing law and get the canopy in the right spot, maybe with some other restrictions to help other businesses, that would be great. But the concern is the office, as they were a little bit squirrely pretending they didn't know about these plans in Elk River or not that thoroughly, may not adjust the canopies fairly when they do it. So because of what we have seen with how this has been done, this amendment is an effort to at least guard against unfair treatment down the road, potential unfair treatment down the road based on the actions we have seen.
Representative Katiza Watum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that, Chair West. So it is my understanding, and albeit I'm a relative novice when it comes to cannabis law, that the existing legislation and powers of OCM would allow them to raise the canopy for all the businesses, but you have some concern that they would pick and choose other macro businesses instead of these ones that have licenses currently?
Yeah, the concern is they would pick other license types and deliberately not increase the canopy of those that they seem, you know, I'm not maligning the motives of anyone here, but the actions seem to have not been particularly fair to some players in the industry, and this is trying to address that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Commissioner Tobel, I have information before me that indicates that the Elk River documents were uploaded to your portal in September of 2025. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, I'm not involved in the day-to-day licensing review of the applications. September 2025 would have been the date on which the company in question would have filed their initial site registrations so that they could be converted from the prior registration-based system where we were in contract with the two providers to convert to what we call the medical combination cannabis business license. I believe the facility, because it's not operational, they registered it in advance. However, because it's not operational, they didn't proceed with the registration for it. So that would be my assumption as to why they would have registered or uploaded site specifics as to that non-operational site at that time.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you were headed right where I was to the testifier. So if an organization, I believe, has to expand their business, they're going to send you some intent to expand. And your supposition, and apparently the author of the underlying bill's supposition, is that they didn't know that this was happening. Is that what you're telling us?
Commissioner Tobel.
Mr. Chair, thank you for the question. My statements earlier were that I don't have a recollection of having a specific conversation with the business about what they plan to do at various sites at which they hold operations. These large companies have multiple sites, whether it's for retail, manufacture, cultivation. Some have separate storage sites or storage facilities. So they have multiple sites with these large operational licenses.
Chair Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If we were to do a data request, what would we find communication-wise with OCM and this organization from a conversational perspective?
Chair Tobel.
Mr. Chair, Chair Nash, thank you for the question. You would actually find, to the extent that it's still within the email retention period, a lot of communication by the Office of Cannabis Management over the fall and winter, reaching out to both of the incumbent medical companies, seeking their direct interaction on the development of the proposal that the author has put forward today, specifically asking them to work with us in the development of a streamlined proposal that was assigned to this office by this body last session. While we continuously reached out to not only those two incumbent providers, but also every other part of the industry, including advocates, including patients, including people who were trying to get licenses, to talk about what a overall streamlining bill would work for the whole industry that represented a fair right-sizing of the market and alignment with the existing licensing framework. So you would see a lot of those invitations, and you wouldn't necessarily see a lot of calendar invites for meetings that happened about those. And it's not for a lack of trying by the Office of Cannabis Management to get into a room with those incumbents to talk about what it is they were looking for needed in this space. I would also note that, broadly speaking, and as Representative Hansen testified to, this time last year at the end of session, I believe it was either the April 5th or April 25th Commerce hearing before the House, representatives from both of the incumbent medical companies testified that absent streamlining, absent a combining of the medical and adult use supply chains, their businesses would ultimately perish because the ratio that tied their ability to sell adult use to medical meant that they had to expand a medical program. And in fact, no state that has legalized adult use cannabis after having medical cannabis legalized has seen their medical cannabis program grow. And in fact, most have seen them shrink. And so the testimony before this body last year from those incumbent businesses was that if this ratio continues, if this segmented supply chain continues, our businesses will atrophy to the point where we will not be able to operate even at the current scale. And so I think one of the things that's important to note is while the total number of canopy does decrease, the operational efficiency and flexibility afforded to the companies that currently operate as medical providers increases greatly. Because in the current system, they have to dedicate an entire room to medical one day, grow for 60 to 120 days, and then flip it to a different setup later. And so those efficiencies are seen as valuable by industry. And again, What you would see in that data request is multiple attempts to engage with the incumbent medicals about this proposal so that we can arrive at a proposal that works for everyone in the market.
Representative Nash.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Well, that certainly sounds like a different story than what you just said a little bit ago, that you vaguely heard that they may expand. Second question, and it'll be brief. When you look at what might be the ensuing lawsuit that one of our members, I don't remember who, said, who would likely be on the hook to defend the state in that?
Chair Tall, or Commissioner Tall.
And is there an appropriation for that?
Chair Torkelson, Chair Nash, thanks for your question. Any time that, someone files a lawsuit related to legislation that comes out of one of these bodies, usually the agency that's charged with implementing that legislation is on the hook to pay for the Attorney General's fees. I will take note that the Attorney General's office charges very reasonable rates for the lawyers that they have, and they're high-quality lawyers.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just wanted to know where to follow the money.
Any other? Chair Claiborne.
Thank you very much. And I'm not exactly sure what's happening right now in our committee. I'm a little bit confused. I'm not a cannabis user. I don't know a lot about cannabis. I remember working on this bill when it first came before the body, I don't know, in 2019 or 2020 or whatever, whenever it was, and I was interested in it from the perspective of agriculture and building our agricultural economy. But what I'm hearing in this conversation tonight is that we are not talking about how we regulate an agency, or we are not talking about how we treat all companies fairly. What I'm hearing, and I don't know why, because I don't know anything about what's happening in this committee, but it sure as heck sounds to me like we are advocating for one particular business, and I don't know what business that is, but that is not our job. Our job is not to be in this room advocating for this business or that business. Our job is to look at the bill in this, to say, do the finances of this bill work? The questions that I'm hearing asked right now are committee questions. And I realize this is a DE, but I sure as heck don't know what's happening right now. And it's making me very uncomfortable. And for that reason alone, I would say we should not be adopting this amendment that was offered tonight, the A1. Until we have a full understanding of what the heck is actually happening here. We can certainly adopt the DE without the A1, and if it is something that's needed, because this doesn't sound like it changes the finance, then this is something we can debate at some other time. But certainly something is going on here where this half of the table, or at least this particular member, has no idea what we're arguing.
Chair Claiborne, are you requesting that we delay action on this bill?
Pardon?
Are you requesting that we delay action on the bill?
No, I am not. I'm saying that amendment.
It sounds like you're uninformed. Should we delay action?
I just absolutely said I am uninformed about what we are doing with the A1. I will admit wholeheartedly that I have no idea. What I'm telling you, what I'm hearing is advocacy for one business, potentially two, as opposed to, is this the right policy as a whole? And there didn't seem to be a problem with the bill until this A1 is brought up. So I am, and if you, Mr. Chair, can explain to me exactly why I'm hearing advocacy for one business, I would be all ears, and I'm happy to hear that.
I'll be happy to do that, Chair Claiborne. There's a business in Elk River that is expanding in this arena. And they're expanding under the current rules that allow a canopy of up to 90,000 square feet. This bill reduces that canopy limit to 45,000 square feet, causing them to have to abandon a multi-million dollar investment as a result of the action of this bill. Any other questions?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I do have a question. Exactly why, when our agency is telling us that the right thing to do is to allow all businesses, as opposed to one business, to have a fair playing field, where you're asking for one business to have an advantage over the others. I don't understand that, and that's what I'm confused by. If the policy is that canopy, and canopy size is regulated by the agency, then should we not be listening to the experts on this?
Chair Claiborne, they're moving the goalposts in the middle of the football game. They've chosen to ignore the expansion proposition of this business in order to accommodate a smaller canopy that is being required by people that live outside of the state of Minnesota.
Then may I ask a question, please, of the Office of Cannabis Management?
Yes, you may.
Okay. I'm sorry, your title is director?
Correct.
Thank you. So to the director, I would ask, did this business, I don't know what business we're talking about, what is the size of their canopy, or whatever you can tell me about this?
Director Tall.
Chair Torberson, Chair Kimmer, thank you for the question. So at the point at which we moved to switch from the registration contract-based old medical system to the new license system, we sent an inspector to each of the existing medical companies to measure their canopy. And canopy includes basically all mature flowering plants. They tend to be held on sort of these trays within these large facilities, and so we measure the parameters of the tray. That measurement is contained in the rules that we promulgated in April of 2025. In the initial measurements for both of the companies, we measured their initial canopies, and we can provide the letters we sent to each of the manufacturers, their public data. We measured each of them to determine their current medical canopy, and then under the law that exists at the time, they were entitled for this current year to grow half of that canopy to be sold into the adult use market. So one of them measured it around 34,000 square feet of medical. So they were given a, like a canopy of, 17,000 was the adult use canopy they got. So whatever the double up of that is. And then for the other one, it was around 12,500. Was the canopy they got. Both of them in that first measurement were around 30,000 medical, and so you'd have about half that in adult use. We did a second measurement in February of this year, and we'll do a third measurement probably later this month or early next month. The second measurement that occurred at the two facilities in February, we saw slight canopy growth of about 2 to 2,500 square feet total, which pushed them closer to about 38,000 total. Square feet of canopy between the medical and the adult use, and the other one came in around, I want to say, 34 or 35 between combining the two together. So those would be canopies that were larger than what we would have seen during the 14-year or the 10-year pendency of the medical program as well, since the medical program was relatively small.
Okay. Mr. Chair.
Chair Claiborne.
Thank you. And so is it your thought then that under the existing, they were operating under the existing rules, they knew the existing rules at that time, and their canopy was in the range that was appropriate for that time?
Director Doppel.
Chair Torkelson, Chair Cabone, yes, that's correct.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, continue. I'm just trying to get my head around what's happening here. Okay, so then, at that time when you went in to measure, did they say to you that they were expanding and that they were going to be doing all of this?
Director Tobel.
Chair Torkelson, Chair Cleaver. Candidly, I was not there. And so the inspector who went in met with representatives from the agent or from the organizations to measure. He asked them to take them to each of the rooms where products were being grown. He then walked around and measured off the various tables to determine whether or not the canopy, what it was. We sent those letters to the companies. In all candor, one of the companies has, some disagreement about whether or not our number's accurate, but that's the measurements we've had, and it reflects our understanding of what the current actual canopy is at those facilities.
Thank you very much.
Chair Clavel, are you done?
I think I'm done. I'll be okay. Voting no.
Chair Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I just do want to identify what's happening here quickly, because when we first, we started with a medical cannabis program in Minnesota that only had two licensees, and so it was very restrictive. It was the most restrictive in the country, and so we basically created a duopoly in that space. And so when we were,
coming up with the original cannabis bill in 2019, I was very involved with you know, developing it. And I will just tell you that, you know, the two cannabis companies started as local Minnesota companies and were acquired by multi-million-dollar, multi-state conglomerate corporate cannabis companies. Actually, at least one of the companies, there have been criminal charges levied against the individuals who ran that in 2017. For trafficking products out of Minnesota to another state. They're still operating in the state. And so we had this issue because what we wanted to do when we were setting up the cannabis system in Minnesota was we wanted to create space for small firms, Minnesota firms. We wanted, as we, you know, created this market, we weren't just trying to make space for like the Walmart of weed to come in and make a lot of money. We wanted our local communities to benefit from this policy change that we were pursuing. And I'm just going to say what the thing is, which is that at every step of the development of this bill and every change that it's gone through since, those multi-million dollar companies with very well compensated lobbyists, I'm sure they're in the room, perhaps several of them, have done what they could do to get advantages for themselves. And at every single step, and you know, hey, people come and try to get advantage, or people or entities come and try to get advantages for themselves every day. That's kind of what a lot of people do here. But you know, I'm concerned about, you know, hearing, because, you know, I've tracked some of this over the last couple of years, and that, you know, representatives of these companies, I don't know what to call it besides lied, in order to get a policy change. And you know, I'm really concerned, and I want us, as we're talking about, you know, we're going to be modifying the cannabis system because we created an entirely new market in Minnesota when we legalized cannabis, and it was a very, very complex endeavor. It was the most complex legislation I've ever been involved with. I mean, I can't remember how many committee stops it made. It touched so many parts of law, so many parts of our state, and we're going to continue to modify it moving forward for those of us who will be here in the future. And I guess I just would ask us all to keep the original intent of the way that we tried to design the market in Minnesota so that it benefited Minnesota residents, so that it wasn't just a place for out-of-state, giant, litigious, in some cases criminal companies to extract profit from our state and then, you know, go off into the sunset. And so I thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair Novotny.
Thank you, Chair Torkelson. Start off with saying this, Representative Cleavorn, Chair Cleavorn.
You can call me Jimmy.
Chair Cleavorn, you make the difference one at a time. This is the battle we start with, right? As I said before, I want nothing to do with this business. I'm not speaking to this business. I'm speaking to the state and the fairness that we do. And to quote the great philosopher, Coach Dennis Green, you can't get the second win until you get the first win. And I can't stand up for the second business that's doing it right and fighting big government until I get the first one. Chair Torkelson, I believe, and maybe I misunderstood, I think Chair Gomez just accused the representative of the company of being a liar. The representative from the company is here in the room, and I believe that they can clear up some of the conversations that were had with the cannabis board here if she'd be willing to come up and testify.
It's fine by me. Chair Novotny, is the testifier you request at hand?
If you want to come up and call the liar, would you like to come up and testify about what they said about you, or?
It's your choice, ma'am. You choose not to?
She says that that's good.
I'm sorry, my hearing's not great.
That's desired by the chair.
Oh, it certainly is my desire, yes.
While she's doing that, I'll make one comment, an observation. Chair Gomez made a comment about a company being maybe involved in some criminal activity. I'm not aware of that, but find it interesting that one of the justifications for getting licenses under the original cannabis board is having a criminal conviction for marijuana or drugs. That was one of the things that was the, we're really going to go out for it. This is going to give you an advantage, but then used as a negative connotation. I don't know anything about what that's about, but thank you.
Welcome to committee. Thank you for being here. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Amber Shimpa. I'm the CEO of Vireo Health of Minnesota.
Thank you, Ms. Shrimpa. A question to Ms. Shrimpa, Chair Novotny.
Thank you. You heard the director talking about what he was aware of and what the Cannabis Board was aware of and when they were aware of it. Is it in your opinion that they knew exactly what you were doing and how big your operation was planned on being? Sounds like there was a site visit. Given the size of the building that I'm familiar that you're going to be in, would there be an impression? Did you give them the number of $90,000 as an anticipated size?
Ms. Shrimpa.
Square feet.
Ms. Shrimpa.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative. So there was, as Director Tobel mentioned, a significant amount of stakeholder engagement around their streamlining proposal. And we certainly participated in that. There was also early indication shared with the Office of Cannabis Management around our plans to expand into the city of Elk River with that canopy. I think someone had mentioned here that documents were uploaded in September. It may have even been before that. Certainly, that site has been something we've had identified early and then started plans and construction on building that out in reliance upon the bill and the law that was passed in 2023 for the 90,000 of canopy that was allowed under the current Med Combo license.
Chair Novotny.
Thank you, Chair. I think that makes it pretty clear to me what the company, or I would assume a state agency, given the information that they had been provided with, would make a reasonable assumption that was what it was going to be based on everything. I have no more questions. Thank you for coming up. I have one last comment to Chair Gomez's comments. You say you want to make a difference for people in Minnesota. Well, this facility running at full capacity that it was anticipated to be at under the rules that were established when they were establishing their business plan and doing that $30 million build out would have made a difference for the 107 people that would have gotten jobs at that facility. I don't know the size of the other facility that they have for cannabis, medicinal cannabis that they have nearby. A loss like this could easily sink this business, and it would make a difference for the employees that they already have. So that affects Minnesotans just as much as anything else. The people working here with good, high-paying jobs that would be paying into your paid family medical leave aren't going to have that opportunity now. Thank you, Chair.
I'm going to ask Ms. Shrimper to come back to the testifiers table. I believe that Chair Frazier has a question. Chair Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you repeat your name again? I want to make sure I'm addressing you correctly.
Yes, Amber Shimpa.
Ms. Shimpa, in these conversations that you had with the Office of Cannabis Management, in regards to these, in regards to the proposal that we're talking to right now, did you agree with them or not agree with them?
Ms. Shimpa.
Are you talking about the streamlining proposal?
Yes.
As I mentioned, we had significant interactions with OCM and all stakeholders around that process. I don't recall the specific date, but I recall in the December 2025 timeline, I was asked by OCM to join a call where they were going to share kind of their final updates on the streamlined proposal. It was in that call where they shared with me the first time that the planned canopy reduction. And it was also in that call then when I expressed my strong opposition to that and reminded them of our significant investment we were making in the Elk River facility and in reliance on the 2023 legislation that allowed us to continue to grow our business up to 90,000 square feet.
Chair Frazier.
So that's a yes, you disagree with the streamlining process.
We support the majority of the streamlining proposal. The piece of that that we do not support is the canopy reduction for the med combo business license, or what's being now called a macro business.
Chair Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are you a registered lobbyist in this state?
I am personally not.
Chair Frazier.
Do you have lobbyists registered in the state?
Ms. Shrempa.
I do.
Are they here?
Not present in this room, no.
Yeah, continue, Mr. Chair.
Chair Frazier.
Thank you. Ms. Shrempa, can you speak to the legal matters in other states? Can you describe what's happening with those?
I don't know what you're...
Were there any previous ongoing legal issues with your company in other states?
Not that I'm aware of, Representative.
Chair Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You're not aware of any legal issues with your company in any other states?
Ms. Shrempa.
That's a very broad question, Representative. I'm not aware of anything. You'd have to be more specific.
Has your company had any legal issues in any other states that you operate in the cannabis industry?
Ms. Shrempa.
Again, that's a very broad statement, Representative, and I'm not on our legal team, and I can't speak to that.
Chair Frazier.
Ms. Shepard, you're the CEO,
correct? Of our Minnesota subsidiary.
You don't have any knowledge of any other of the other entities that are part of the global corporation and the legal proceedings in any other states?
Ms. Shrempa.
I would not be the individual within the company that would oversee any legal matters outside of the state here.
Chair Frazier.
I'm going to ask this question. If you don't have the answer today, would you be willing to provide information about any legal issues that this company has had in any other states to this committee for review?
Ms. Shrempa.
We commit to maintaining compliance with all state regulations that we're required to adhere to.
Chair Frazier.
Is that a refusal to submit that information to the committee?
It is not. It's a commitment to continue to uphold our requirement to be compliant under state regulations and rules.
Then can we follow up and request that information where you submit it?
Excuse me?
If I was to do research and find that there are legal cases in other states, and I followed up with you or your representative, would they submit information about those cases to this committee?
Chair Frazier,
There were questions asked. I'm just trying to make sure. I want to get clarity on that.
Talking about the business in Minnesota.
Understood.
And you go ahead and ask your question, but it seems like you're getting a bit far afield.
All right, that was it. Just a request for information if they would be responsive. That is the question, if you would be responsive to those requests.
I would have to defer to our legal representative who would have more information on whatever you're asking about, sir.
I think that's fair and reasonable, but that is the question. And I think you should do that. I'm a lawyer. I think you should defer to your legal counsel, but that was the question that I have, if you would be responsive to those questions.
I would not be the individual that would be responsive to those questions on behalf of the company.
One final question.
Chair Frazier.
Could you please relieve the leave the information and contact for the individual that would be responsible.
Happy to.
Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no other questions, we will move to vote on the A1 amendment. A roll call has been requested. Please call the roll.
Chair Torkelson.
Aye.
Chair Frazier.
No.
Vice Chair Scott. Vice Chair Agbaje.
No.
Representative Akam.
No.
Representative Backer.
Aye.
Representative Baker.
Aye.
Representative Bierman.
No.
Representative Gomez.
No.
Representative Heintzman.
Aye.
Representative Igo.
Igo, aye.
Representative Cleavorn.
Cleavorn, no.
Representative Cagle.
No.
Representative Katiza Watoon.
No.
Representative Kosnick.
Aye.
Representative Kresha.
Aye.
Representative Lilly.
Lilly, no.
Representative Moeller.
No.
Representative Nash.
Aye.
Representative Knorr.
No.
Representative Novotny.
Aye.
Representative Olson.
Aye.
Representative Pinto.
No.
Representative Schumacher.
Schumacher, aye.
Representative Swidzinski.
Swidzinski, aye.
Representative Vang.
No.
Representative West.
Aye.
Representative Joachim.
No.
Being 14 ayes and 14 nays, the amendment fails. Representative Hansen, can you explain the relationship between canopy size and streamlining?
Thank you, Chair Torkelson. Last time I answered this question for you, you told me it got a little too complicated, so I'm going to practice getting it shorter for you, because it is a quite complicated, you know, conversation. But at its most basic tenets, the concept of canopy, as you're referring to it as sets the maximum amount of square footage that a business can grow, and that streamlining does that. It sets the maximum plant square footage that a company can grow. And in our bill, it allows for a growth year over year. So 2,000 the first year, 2,000 the second year, 3,000 the third year, and then we'll reevaluate what that looks like. In addition to the office having the authority to increase canopy for any certain license type in order to achieve a higher or lower number than the 1.5 million number I believe you mentioned earlier, at their discretion, as long as there's a market need for to do so. We know that oversaturation of too much canopy can be detrimental to an overall industry. We've learned lessons from other states that when the canopy is too high, you just kind of have a free-for-all. You end up with too much product. That drives down the cost of product. Anyone with a kind of basic supply and demand understanding, like, will kind of apply that logic here, and that's the same thing. So we want to make sure that the, you know, we are careful of that. We think it's important that we set businesses up for success in Minnesota. This is a new industry, and so we've tried to be understanding that, you know, people my age and in my generation don't always get lots of opportunities to do this. It's a hard economy right now, and so this is an industry that my generation specifically is interested in, and I think lots of others. And, you know, for example, this industry brought in $27 million in state taxes last year, and then in just April 2026 alone, $25 million in state taxes. So a 50% increase in just 1 month over what was seen for the entire year before that, and not to mention the national hemp beverage industry that we lead on, which is a $67 billion industry. Most other states base their model off of this. So because we've become a beacon for the rest of the country for good cannabis and hemp policy, we find it's important to continue to be thoughtful and intentional about having a realistic and adequate canopy as to not have a boom and a bust of what we've proven to become a state or a national leader in and a North Star state.
Chair Hansen, I'd like you to try to think from the perspective of a company. Is it possible that streamlining would be advantageous to your company at the same time as having your canopy cut would be a disadvantage?
Thank you, Chair Torkelson. I'm not a business owner, like I said, so it's a bit difficult for me to do that. My background's in social work and politics.
Well, so it's kind of where my expertise is in.
If you can't answer that, Chair Hansen,
I'm happy to try to answer your question,
though,
Chair Torkelson.
From a business perspective, streamlining could be a very beneficial thing and is a beneficial thing for the industry here in Minnesota. But if you're an industry that has worked on streamlining and believes it's something favorable, you could also be very disappointed that this regulatory system is cutting your canopy size.
Sure. Thank you, Chair Torkelson. And like I was just saying that I'm not claiming to be an expert, and so I was just prefacing it with what my expertise is in social-emotional things and politics and public policy. And so I absolutely, that side of me can absolutely understand how the existence of a duality of truth can be tough for somebody. And I think we all struggle with that to some degree. But I also want to emphasize that, you know, we heard that the program as it was working and was not going to continue to work, just as we kind of thought when we were doing this. I use this example with you, and I think maybe it'll be appropriate here. If you build a motorcycle and put a cheap carb on it, you're going to need to replace it with something better later. And we have kind of gummed up the carb at this point, and we need to put something better in it. And that's kind of the analogy I'm using, is that we knew that this was not going to get us very far, and now we need to make sure we replace it with a higher quality part and something more sustainable. And so that's what we're attempting to do by right-sizing this and making a good investment in what that looks like, and while still addressing it. You know, people bring issues on cannabis to me, and the way that I approach it is to look at the principles of what they brought forward. This particular stakeholder group, for example, has over 80 stakeholders in it, and it is hard to kind of juggle all of those different perspectives. But, you know, not everyone's going to love everything we do, and obviously we hear about that from my colleagues or give me a run for my money on it, but the same is true on the public as
Chair
well.
Chair Mueller has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And more just a comment, kind of like Chair Cleavorn. I was really surprised at what was happening here. I want to just thank Representative Hansen for your work on this, and your knowledge is incredible. You said you aren't an attorney, and I know you're not an attorney, but you could be. And your expertise here is unmatched, and I've seen you do that both here and in other bills you work on.
Thank you.
Also just want to say that this sort of implication that our members and the director of OCM are lying is just really very frustrating to hear today. I know we're at the end of session and everybody gets a little ornery at this time, but just hope that we can remember to treat everybody with dignity and respect. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Chair Gomez. Chair Mueller. I'm sorry. I was thinking of.
I'll take it as a compliment.
You may not want to, because I was thinking of the term lying. I'm sorry.
The term what?
Any other questions or comments to the bill? Chair Cosman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Sorry, we're still on the DE. To the questions or comments to the DE, Chair Cosman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, just kind of going back at when we established this program, it was under the trifecta, and I was on the State Government Finance Committee. We had a variety of questions and concerns around the overall program. And so I'm not surprised that we find ourselves in the situation today trying to streamline and better create a program that was not properly and very well thought out. And there was constituents in my district that were interested in perhaps investing in this industry. They were not offered that opportunity in a typical free market type of industry. And I'm not surprised that we have these issues. I will be voting no.
Any other questions or comments to the DE as amended? Seeing none, roll call has been requested on the DE. We will take the roll on the DE amendment as amended.
Chair Torkelson.
No.
Chair Frazier.
Aye.
Vice Chair Scott.
No.
Vice Chair Agbegje.
Aye.
Representative Akam.
Aye.
Representative Backer.
No.
Representative Baker.
No.
Representative Bierman.
Aye.
Representative Gomez.
No. Or aye. Excuse me. Wrong with
that. Representative Heintzman.
No.
Representative Igo.
Igo, no.
Representative Cleavorn.
Cleavorn, aye.
Representative Cagle.
Aye.
Representative Katiza Watun.
Aye.
Representative Kosnick.
No.
Representative Kreisha.
No.
Representative Lilly.
Aye.
Representative Moeller.
Aye.
Representative Nash.
No.
Representative Knorr.
Aye.
Representative Novotny.
No.
Representative Olson.
No.
Representative Pinto.
Aye.
Representative Schumacher.
Schumacher, no.
Representative Swedzinski.
Swedzinski, no.
Representative Vang.
Aye.
Representative West.
Aye.
Representative Joachim.
Aye.
There being 15 ayes and 13 nays, the amendment is adopted. To the House file, I'm sorry, Senate file 4401 as amended by the DE amendment. Any questions or comments? Representative West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill has been a doozy to work on, but we are nearing the end of it. When I approach, I think when anybody on the Republican side approaches industry issues, our goal is to help as many people as possible. And what we find is that that's not necessarily true for all parties involved. And it becomes incredibly difficult to try and get to a bill to a place where everybody can win. Now, this bill does many, many good things. The hemp industry is hopefully saved from oblivion. The being able to own a license, a cannabis license, being able to transfer a cannabis license, being able to carry a large format product gives them the tools to continue to thrive in Minnesota despite some federal headwinds. Unfortunately, the federal government has prohibited hemp products from crossing state lines, much like what we're seeing in the negatives of this bill of cutting the canopy for existing players. Government can be a benefit, but it also can be incredibly harmful to business, which doesn't make any sense. We should be supporting our industry, supporting our homegrown Minnesota companies. The way the cannabis law has gone so far, it's incentivized, honestly, it's incentivized people who already have capital, and tribal governments have been the big winners. The current incumbents, the two medical operators, well, they started before everybody else because they took many losses on the medical program and then just started to have profitable businesses and started to grow, but now it seems we are going to clip their wings a bit. However, it is my hope that the department will see better and, well, one, I wouldn't mind seeing more canopy raised, but in particular, it seems like this litigation might end up changing that by itself whenever that may come. The goal of the bill, well, the goal of the cannabis industry as set up by the DFL and the trifecta was explicitly to create a craft market, so that created a social equity system where you were a social equity applicant if you had 65% of a license and you qualified in a number of different categories. And the goal there was to give people a leg up who may or may not have otherwise had it, which is a noble endeavor. But in practice, they've only been hamstrung and kneecapped at every single turn. Misguided policy got the lottery canceled that was supposed to give a head start to social equity applicants, and that policy, the department and others were warned that that would lead to litigation, and sure enough it did, to which the department essentially lost and lost the ability to give a head start to the people they wanted to give a head start to. Then in this bill, we make some improvements because right now we have thousands of applicants, but not very many who have been able to bring their businesses to fruition. They have been starving for product, paying massive costs for product that dies on the market, and all they get is more delays, more regulation, and they don't have a good tool to raise investment because they are barred from selling more than 35% of their business. Now, we weren't able to change that, but we do have a provision in here that allows an individual to own up to 4 licenses at 33%, which gives much needed help to, you know, the people who may be trying to make it in this business, because we want all licensees to thrive, and we should focus on helping different license types and improving different license types, improving access to capital, rather than looking for ways to hamstring existing businesses. It's just not a good way, especially when Minnesota is such a difficult place to do business in the first place. So the medical streamlining portion of the bill desperately needed. The current medical regulations were terrible. We told them that the ratio wouldn't work as a canopy. They knew the ratio wouldn't work as a canopy, yet they did it anyways. Now we're back to poundage, which is exactly what was recommended when this was first being devised. The canopy is going credibly, you could maybe say the canopy should be 60,000 maybe, based if you look at the statute. However, 90,000 was effectively was, and cutting that all the way down to 38,000 and scaling up is an unnecessary massive cut. But like all legislation, sometimes you can't make everything perfect. And this bill in particular helps the hemp industry that desperately needs it. It helps applicants who are trying to get into the business access capital and actually get off the ground. And that is key to getting a hold of the black market in our state. Because right now, when cannabis is so expensive to get legally, it doesn't do much to curb the black market, which is the largest benefit when it comes to a legal cannabis market. The bill also, in the medical space, prioritizes patients even more than it did prior, and that is a really important element because the canopy layout of this ratio system for the medical operators incentivized medical product, but not necessarily the medical product that people really needed, and this bill does do that. It's taken a long time to get here, but we are finally here. I will be voting for this bill to send it to the General Register. My hope is that while litigation will probably resolve the worst part of the bill, we need to have a different focus when it comes to this industry. We need to be looking for ways to help, looking for ways to improve access to capital, improve access to success, rather than putting a litany of barriers and then changing the rules midstream of these companies. So my hope is this is going to be the start of a thriving industry for the cannabis businesses that have been desperate to get started, and this bill gives them that chance, and we can continue to see growth in our hemp industry, and I am very happy to see that with our medical patients being prioritized, which is something that both caucuses care very much about. So with that, I will be voting for the bill.
Thank you, Chair West. Chair Hansen, our wrap-up.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, committee members. I think it's always a great day to support the cannabis industry. I am really glad to hear that my bill is beautiful. I think this is the best big, beautiful bill here in Minnesota this year. So if you want to indulge me and share in that joy with me, I want to thank all of the stakeholders that have come together and talked about this. Like I said, there's over 80 stakeholders in this particular group, and it's really hard for everyone to work together. We are all, some of us are Democrats, some are Republicans, some are independents, small business owners, large business owners, lobbyists. Everybody. I mean, this is a very impressive group of people that otherwise probably would never be friends. And I know they're watching online today. They came here to be here but many had to go. So I just want to say a thank you to them. And thank you to Chair Torkelson for helping to talk to me about this and letting me teach you about cannabis and helping learn as much as you have. We're going to talk about frogs soon, I promise, Chair Torkelson, and we will have a great time. So I just want to say thank you for everyone who's come together to get this done. I appreciate you. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll renew the motion on Senate file 4401 as amended to be passed to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The bill passes. You are on your way to the General Register.
Thank you.
This may be our last meeting. Members, please stay for a bit. This may be our last meeting. Not sure, but just in case, I would like to go through a few thank yous and introductions. first to Emily Adrians, who's not here, but has been our chief fiscal analyst. She has a replacement. Ken Savory showed up this evening and is channeling Emily and doing it very well. Thank you for your work. Colby Sullivan, House Research Analyst, who has been with us throughout. Thank you, Colby, for your work. Partisan staff, my CLA, Ali Spellman, my researcher, Matt Eichinger, and my very able committee administrator, Harry Kennedy. I want to thank all of them. On the DFL side, DFL Committee Legislative Assistant, Emma Erdahl. Emma's here, I'm sure. There she is. Dave Sullivan, DFL researcher, right there. Thank you, Dave. And finally, Sean Herring, one of the fabulous trio of goatees that I noticed in the hallway earlier. Of course, one of them was in a painting, but the other two looked great. Thank you all for your work. Thank you to my co-chair, and thank you to the members of the committee. It's a big committee, but we I think we wrangled it pretty well. Thank you for your participation, and I look forward to the end of the session. And those of you that still have work to do, please get your work done. This meeting is adjourned.